Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm Joel Fragamenti. I'm your host. I'm telling you what's going on at the Comedy Castle. We're going to hear from our headliner this weekend, Steve Byrne, in just a couple of minutes. I had a great talk with Steve. I had a lot of questions because he's a guy whose career that I have followed for the past decade since he came into the Comedy Castle the first time. We'll recap some of the stuff we talked about. But Steve's awesome, and you'll hear my interview with him shortly. All right? Okay. Here's what's going on at the castle this week. All the shows. We've got open mic night on Wednesday, May 29. That's at 7:30 p.m. If you want a reservation, call the Comedy Castle at 248-542-9900. If not, you show up. It's $5 to get in. So come to open mic night on Wednesday night. Got a nice lineup of professionals, some amateurs, some new people, some veterans. It's always fun at open mic night. That's Wednesday night. And Thursday, May 30th, starts the weekend with Steve Byrne. We've got the Thursday show at 7:30 p.m. On Friday night, May 31st, 7:15 p.m. and 9:45 for you. And then on Saturday, we've got a very special afternoon show with Christina Kuzmic. Christina is a author. She won an Oprah a contest to be Oprah's search for the next TV star in 2011. Since then, she's gone viral with over a billion video views on social media, and she's written books, including "I Can Fix This" and "Other Lies I Told Myself While Parenting My Struggling Child." And that is in the "Lies I Told Myself" tour is the name of her tour. So she's there 12. I'm sorry. She's there 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st, 2:30 p.m. There are VIP tickets available for that one, which will give you priority seating and a post-show meet and greet. Or you can get a general admission ticket that doesn't include those other things, but you can watch the show. Those are available up on comedycastle.com, so we get the very special afternoon show. And then Steve Byrne for two shows that evening at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Those are our shows this week, guys. And I'll tell you what, Steve Byrne, that guy's awesome. I talked to him. It was super fun. And first of all, I want to say thanks to Steve for going out of his way on a Memorial Day to talk to me. That's right. We talked on Memorial Day Monday, and that was fun. You know, I didn't expect to talk to him. I said, well, I could do it Tuesday afternoon. He goes, nah, we'll do Monday. And we did it, and it was really fun. He was just getting in from traveling. You know, Steve is in demand. He's all over the country. If you go on his website, he's headlining clubs. He's got a great charity event coming up in Cleveland with tons of big, I'm sorry, in Pittsburgh. His native, he's a Pittsburgh native, but Steve's just great. And the thing about Steve, and you'll hear it in the interview, is I believe I had at least a little something to do with why Steve is booked for this weekend in 2024, because Steve was at the club over 10 years ago with his sitcom Sullivan and Son that he created and was a star of, and he had a bunch of other comics on that show, including Roy Wood, who's been through here. You guys know Roy Wood Jr. He's Daily Show. And Roy's really having a real hot streak here in show business. And they all came in and did this great show. It was the season finale of Sullivan and Son on TBS. And we had a really fun night that night. So we talk a little bit about that. And then I didn't see Steve for years and years. Wasn't sure. I'd seen some of his movies, including The Opening Act, which I recommend you watch. If you're doing comedy, and certainly if you're a fan of comedy, you'll see sort of the other side if you watch the movie The Opening Act. It's real fun. And made an amazing Jonathan documentary. We get into that, too. But I saw him opening for Sal Vulcano of Impractical Jokers. Steve has really latched onto their live shows. I believe he's been on the television show as well. But Steve was opening for Sal Vulcano, and I thought he was so great. I went into work the next day. I saw Mark Ridley and said, man, Steve Byrne was so great. We haven't seen him in years. Let's bring him back. So here he is. Here he is this weekend. Like I said, Steve, really gracious to talk to me. on the way home from the airport on Memorial Day. So we'll talk a little bit about those movies that I talked about, the opening act, his always amazing documentary with the amazing Jonathan. Remember, at the time, there were two amazing Jonathan documentaries, and there was some controversy about with one of the movies was a little unethical. You'll hear about that. You'll also hear about him, his early days at the Comedy Cellar with the guys like Jim Norton and Bill Burr. Some Greg Giraldo memories we've got for you on this one. We'll also talk about Joe Coy at the Golden Globes. And I knew Joe Coy got a rough, he got a real rough treatment from the media for his Golden Globes monologue. And I thought Joe Coy, that wasn't fair to him. I thought Joe Coy was funny. I think people didn't know him or respect him enough to really give him a fair shake. But Steve knows Joe very well, and you'll hear sort of the behind the scenes on that, which I thought was interesting. But once again, Steve, one of the smartest guys around, super funny. I really enjoy, I think his style has developed in the 11-year gap between his Comedy Castle appearances, and what you're about to see this weekend is really in your face. It's funny. It might be uncomfortable at times, but it's very enjoyable, and he is a real sweet guy, as you'll hear on this interview. So let's just throw it to that, and we'll come back and talk a little bit after that. Here's Steve Byrne. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, I am honored to have the great Steve Byrne talking to me today. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Joel, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Steve's a road warrior. He's out there.
I certainly am. I just walked out of the Nashville airport realizing I'm going to be right back here tomorrow morning again. Just unbelievable.
That's some life, man. But you're successful, so you're working a lot. You're traveling.
The barometer of success is different for everybody. No, it's to be working as a comic these days is very, you know, it's the greatest job in the world, 100%. So 22-year-old me would be very blown away, but 49-year-old me is really exhausted.
I used to do the road, and I stopped just to work for Mark Ridley over at the club. But the road is exhausting. I don't think people get that, you know, comedy's fun and you're at the club, but, you know, that's 2 hours a night, 3 hours a night, maybe.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because my wife, we've been together for quite some time, and she, you know, when we first kind of really started dating, she goes, "What's the big deal? You work like an hour or 2 hours a night." I'm like, "Just come with me. Come with me. You'll see." And she came, and it's just like, I don't think people realize the other 22 hours is the draining part. You know, it's the, you know, the delays, the cancellations, the anxiety to get to the hotel, the car service isn't here to get you. The hotel doesn't have your reservation. It sounds like, oh, you know, what are you really complaining about? But it's just like, it's the traveling and this the being away from home that is the most kind of like draining aspect of it all. But it all is worth it the minute you get up there and, you know, you connect with the audience on that first joke and you hear it. It's like, all right, now we're in the groove. This is going to be fun. So,
I got so many questions for you because you let's just go through your history with our club, the Comedy Castle. You did. I know the Sullivan and Son tour at least once, maybe twice. I'm trying to remember. It's been years, but
I think I'll be honest. I think I've only worked the room once.
That was that show.
That was that show. And it was an isolated evening. So it's just one of those clubs or markets. I guess it just hasn't clicked for some reason. But for some reason it did this year. So I'm definitely excited to get out there because Detroit is one of my favorite cities to visit. I really do. And my neighbor actually works for the Tigers. So it's kind of pretty interesting. We're both in Nashville, but he works for the pitching staff for the Tigers. So definitely excited to get out there. And they happen to be playing the Pirates. So,
Cool. Well, there you go.
Yeah. All worked out.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Cause I'll be honest. I think I had something to do with this current booking and I'll take any blame or praise as it may be, when the weekend's over, but I saw you down the street from our club at the Royal Oak Music Theater with Sal Vulcano.
Got it. Yeah, we did that a few months ago. Yeah,
it was right after the pandemic, because that show was, we had tickets, the pandemic happened, because my fiance is a big Impractical Jokers fan, so we go to all their live shows. And I didn't know you were going to even be on the show, and I go, oh, this is Steve Byrne. I know Steve a little bit from Comedy Castle. And she thought you were amazing, and I go, yeah, Steve's great. And she's like, we got to see Steve when he comes to town. And I was like, okay, we'll see. And then, you know, I went in, I think the next day I went into work, Mark Ridley was there, and I said, I saw Steve Byrne last night, and he just blew me away. It was amazing. And he goes, oh, great. He goes, what's a guy we should bring back to the club? So, I mean, this is...
Oh, that's nice. 21. Well, thank you very much.
Like, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I'll take the blame, too. But
well, you may be, yeah. No, it's interesting because, like, when you do those shows, especially, yeah. You know, Joe Gatto and I do a podcast together called Two Cool Moms. It's coming back on iHeart very shortly. When you've established yourself over the years as a headliner, and then, you know, you're great friends with these guys, and you go out and open, you realize, like, you know, I'm glad I have the like gears I have. I think there's some comics that, you know, whether it's corporate, whether it's, you know, a college gig, whether it's opening for somebody, whatever, I think the more skill sets you have as a comic, the easier those, you know, pivots are going to be. So I've worked really hard on crowd work. I've worked really hard on monologue style, one-liner jokes. Those definitely come into play when you're cracking open a show and you're used to going 45 minutes into a show later as a headliner. So I think I have like four gears, and some comics really just have one gear.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
But thank you very much for that. I appreciate
it. Yeah, it
that.
Was great because you did a thing, which, again, I didn't see this when I had seen you previously. You know, at the Comedy Castle, it was like you jump in the crowd as the opening act, and you're talking to everybody up and down the rows, and it was like, it was this real sort of, it woke people up in a way they did not expect that.
No, and I think that's part of the fun of, like, you know, whether I'm doing that show or my own, like, I really do like to kick the tires in the audience. It not only like cracks the room open, but it establishes, you know, a real relationship there, and you understand, oh, this guy doesn't give a shit what he's at his mouth. Done in a really, in a fun, genuine way. I'm amazed the last few years at, I think I came up of a generation when you did stand-up comedy. You started, you know, rock bottom as an MC, and as an MC, you would go out, you'd introduce yourself, you'd talk to the crowd a little bit, you welcome any birthdays, any this, any that, you know, get the whole format. But nowadays, you got these kids that go up and just like, you know, not knocking anybody, but it's like going right into, I'm suffering depression, anybody else, you know, abortion, right? It's like, you got to earn those moments. And I think you really have to acknowledge that there's an audience in front of you. So I think it's important to do that, to establish them and establish the rapport that you're going to have, whether it's through material or crowd work or improv, whatever it might be.
Yeah. It was really, I was like surprised by that, but it was fantastic. You were really going for it. And I know I've seen some of your crowd work stuff from that crowd work special you did. And it's funny stuff, man. It's really.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Again, I think
some
like
chances a little bit, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm amazed at some of the things that come out of my mouth every single show. I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe you just said that. But it's like, you know, you stretch the rubber band until it snaps, and it hasn't snapped yet. And I think it's just, it's funny because I was just talking to somebody about this the other night. People, they were talking about the Comedy Central roast and how great of a job Jeff Ross did. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jeff Ross is a guy that he studied that, you know, but that's the gear he's really lived in. Mm-hmm. And that's the gear he's really great at. And then you have monologists like Nate Bargatze who just kind of stay in the pocket. They're not going to be a dynamic performer, but they're an incredible comic. Right. Yeah. And so if, you know, then you have, you know, Jeselnik who is, you know, set up dark. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see like the skill sets that comics have, but other people think, oh, you should do the roast. It's like, I'd be horrible at the roast because it's a skill set I don't have. Yeah. It's not something I've worked on. Like monologue jokes are difficult. You have to understand the rhythm of it. Mm-hmm. And so even like when I saw Joe Coy doing the Golden Globes, knowing Joe and knowing how, you know, just energetic he is, it's like again, that's like taking a square peg and putting it in a round hole. It's like, I know he's going to do a serviceable job, but that's not like his, yeah, his speed. You know, that's not right, his
yeah,
gear.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a gear he'll work on, but, you know, I think people think, oh, you're a comedian. You could just go up and do a roast. You can just do the yeah, model. It's like, these are all different skill sets.
Yeah, different energy. I think Joe Coy, when I saw that, I said, you know, if he had gone to any comedy club in the country and done that set, it kills. You go, this guy's hilarious. What a great thing. And then you turn it into Golden Globes and everyone thinks he sucks.
Yeah, unfair. Look, I mean, he was severely handicapped. He was thrown into a situation that he didn't have time to prepare for. I think he had 3 to 4 days to go until he got it. And it's just like the fact that he even got up there and did as great of a job as he did is commendable to him. But, you know, he would have done a hell of a lot better had he had the chance to. He didn't run it once at a comedy club.
Oh,
set.
Really? Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
Had he had the opportunity to do that. And you think about Jimmy Kimmel. Kimmel's going to work for his Oscar monologue with 15 writers over the course of 6 months. And Joe Coy literally had 72 hours, I believe, to get that all on its feet. So, you know, I think to the general public, you could watch it go, oh, it was a serviceable job, or he's bombing, or whatever they might think. But I think to any seasoned comedian, you watch it go, let's understand the circumstances. Holy shit. I mean, he knocked out of the park given the circumstances.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. You'd be great. Yeah, maybe you're up next then at the Golden Globes.
I don't know about that.
Well, look, you're filmmaker, television. Come on. You do it all.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the opening act. Yeah, we talk about that? That was amazing.
Sure, yeah, of course.
That was such a great movie. I remember it came out during the pandemic. Me and my fiance watched it at home, and boy, could I relate to that one.
Yeah, I think it's it's very, you know, there's a lot of inside baseball with that film. You know, as you mentioned, it details the comedian's first time on the road, and it just basically encapsulates all the trials and tribulations a comic will deal with over the course of their, you know, this first few years on the road. You know, unfortunately for Jimmy O. Young's character, it all happens within 4 days. So it's, you know, you're taking,
right,
you know, it's a film. So it's the worst of worst situations and compiling them into 4 days in the film. But really, it's just, it's a story about adversity. Mm-hmm. It's a story about someone who is going to grind through to see their goal come through. And there's no bigger adversity, I think, than, you know, stand up at that age, you know, getting the credits right, understanding the light, morning radio. It's like all the things that comics deal with over the course of a weekend, he's got to deal with. And at the end, it's not, you know, the big parade. It's not like the Super Bowl victory. Mm-hmm. It's literally just, okay, he just got some more bookings out of it. Yeah. He won. So I think the stakes are very high. The win seems small, but the win is he's really setting the trajectory now to become a professional comic because he left his job. So it was a ton of fun to do. All the comics in it were great. And to get to make a film with Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley, it was great.
Yeah, you got to go. If people haven't seen the opening act, you're a fan of comedy, you really, and especially anyone that has done comedy, you'll really get everything. And just seeing all the cameos and even, you know, Kathleen Madigan in there and Joe DeRosa. And I was like, I love these guys. You know, these are my friends, you know. I enjoy
it. Yeah, just the day players and, you know, even Segura came for, I think his stuff was over the course of 2 days. Eliza Schlesinger and Russell Peters and Brooks Whelan, that was one day. Mm-hmm. Bill Burr one day, Roy Wood Jr. one day. So, I mean, we were really blessed with the cast of it all. Even Whitney, you know. But it was an amazing experience. I think the issue with that film is that it just, you know, it had bad luck coming out during the pandemic. And we were just kind of completing it. And it kind of sat on the shelf for a while. It's like, when are we going to release this thing? And then they're like, all right, well, we don't see any end in sight, so let's just put it out there. And so couldn't do talk shows, couldn't do anything. So it was, you know, it's one of those things as a comic, I don't think people realize when you do a film, it's probably 3 years of your life, you know, and you're at a poker table and you go all in on something and it just like it kind of comes out. And that's it, right? And it wasn't as resonant as I thought it could have had the chance to be. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I made something. It legitimized me in that space. Yeah. So it provided the opportunity to do this next one because I'm ramping up to work on another film here. So it's an amazing experience. But it's pretty arduous for sure.
Yeah, I imagine that. And then I got to talk to you because he was a guest on this show, the amazing Jonathan, who.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that whole thing when those it was the two documentaries. And
sure.
Tell me about, because if those of you, if you haven't seen the amazing Jonathan, you know, yours is on YouTube, I believe, still, right? People
yes.
can watch Always Amazing there. And then the guy from Hulu, like, you were in the other documentary, but they like blurred you out. Is that how that went down? How was that like? So Jonathan was kind of working both sides for a payday. How did that work?
I think Jonathan, look, he's a very complicated guy, but he's a guy that at the time lost relevance, right? He wasn't the amazing headliner he was. So the fact that he had two film crews show interest, he was blown away and flattered by it. Yeah. Who wouldn't be? The issue was that he didn't tell me that there was another film being made until, you know, like a week out of us going to Boston and filming this thing, or like 2 weeks out, whatever it was. So I had reached out to the other filmmaker. I just laid my cards on the table. I was like, mine is about Jonathan, of course, but it's really about Jonathan and Joel Osborne, this young kid that he took under his wing. And they ended up having a really unorthodox fraternal relationship. And that's the core and heart of my story. And so the other director was like, mine's more cinema verite. And I just said, look, he asked if I could be interviewed. I'm like, my task, my only job is to do this about Jonathan. I'm not looking to garner attention for myself. I just want to do a film about him. So I respectfully declined. And so he kept filming me and I keep catching him filming me. And It was the craziest thing because I was as respectful as anybody could be. And I thought pretty cool, you know, for example, when he showed up at the casino and didn't have his permits to film there, we put him under the banner of us.
Oh, okay.
When there were only three camera locations, we relented one of ours and gave it to him so he could film there. And then, you know, lo and behold, a year and a half later comes and my friend calls me from Sundance, says, hey, you're in a movie in Sundance. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then he told me that the other guy just kind of disparaged me and made us seem like we were liars and cheats and villains and all this other stuff. And there's a multitude of things that went on behind the scenes that this guy did that were really just shady.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I was always just trying to stay in my own lane. So the whole experience taught me a lot, you know, obviously in terms of like what not to do via how he was operating, but it also kind of showcased another side of Hollywood that told you, yeah, there's some really selfish kind of like evil, vindictive people out there, even if it's for no reason other than you're both, you know, I guess in the same sandbox. And my viewpoint was, look, there's enough room for everybody here. And his viewpoint was, no, there's only room for me. Oh. You can fuck off. And so, you know, at the end of the day, when the dust settled, Jonathan had reached out to me on quite a few occasions saying, yours is the only film that's really about me. Yours is the film that I appreciate. Yours is the film I don't regret making. So like those things happen. And it's like, yeah, you know, you want to hear those things. You want your subject to be happy with the film you made. And, you know, we had a great experience doing it. It was I think a really great testimonial Jonathan's career and who he was as a person and how well he treated Joel. And again, that's another script I banged out and we're taking that to market pretty quickly too. There's some legit people that had seen my doc and said, that's a really interesting dynamic. Let's explore that. And the script could be the greatest thing I've ever written, but I didn't really have much to do with it because I knew that all the stories that Jonathan put Joel through. So it is a banana script and everything in it is true. So I think we're going to march on that pretty quickly.
Right, well, that's great. I'm so fascinated with Jonathan. Always was, came to the, you know, and you know this, how he sort of operated in the later years of his life, came to the Comedy Castle, did his final shows.
Sure.
Year later came back, did more final shows. And then I think a year later came back, did some more final shows, and then finally died.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
he was a carny all the way to the end, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the funnest guys to be around.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started doing stand-up, I was at Charlie Goodnight's in North Carolina. And I open up for him, and, you know, he was there, and Joel, his assistant at the time, he and I just bonded, and the three of us just became friends. So every time I went out to Vegas, I'd crash with them, or, you know, I'd go out to LA to do like Comic View at the time. I'd crash at their house, and just really got to know both of them. And I just thought, man, that relationship is crazy, because you have at the time, like a 30 something headlining Las Vegas, you know, attraction that's also like a severe drug addict. And then you got an 18-year-old kid who meditates and doesn't swear and doesn't party at all. It's like on paper, these two should not be in each other's lives, but they had some incredible adventures, and I can't wait to tell that story as well. It's beyond anything I could even imagine. It's nuts.
Yeah. Well, that's a great story. He is endlessly fascinating. Yeah. If you're listening to this show, you've heard, we've been interviews with him, and we did his, when he died, we did a whole tribute to Jonathan on this show. He was a favorite here. But real quick, before we get you out of here, now it says when I was doing some research on you for this interview, you started your comedy career in New York, or did you do it in Pittsburgh as a young man?
No, never started in Pittsburgh. I grew up in Pittsburgh, went to school in Ohio at Kent State, and then started stand-up in New York City my first 7 years. So within a year, I passed at the Comedy Cellar, and that was kind of like off to the races. I was doing probably 6 or 7 shows a night, and ended up doing a doc called like 13 or Bust about doing 13 shows in a night, which is on YouTube somewhere. So it's, it was the greatest. I definitely got my 10,000 hours in New York City.
That's hard. Because I was going to say, we would have done some of the same one-nighters if you started in Pittsburgh, doing some of those Carol Pennington gigs. You ever do those?
No, I never did any of those. And I think the first time I did Pitt was the old, I think it was the Funny Bone in the Station Square.
Yeah.
And everybody was always like, oh, you're going to get ripped off by these guys. And lo and behold, I got ripped off by those guys. Yeah.
Well, that's good, man, because I was doing West Virginia gigs and all kind of stuff in and around Pittsburgh and Southern Ohio and restaurants. And, well, New York, that sounds like a better, I think there's pros and cons, right? Starting in the city, having all of those big names that you'd be on shows with, or, you know, being the big fish in a small pond, and you sort of went the New York way.
Sure, I think that's what any comic, I think that's what they're, deliberation is when you're moving like out of Chicago or out of Indianapolis. It's like, do I continue getting this great stage time, or do I go and, you know, play ball and go back to the minors, you know? But for me, I think that was the great aspect of being particularly at the Comedy Cellar at that time was, you know, on any given night, it's like you're sitting there and you have 2 hours until you're set. Because it's like midnight, and Godfrey, myself, and Lisa Lampanella would be going on at 1:32. So you're sitting around. It's like, well, I guess I'll watch this guy named Dave Attell. Let's see what he's about. And then you're watching Jim Norton, Patrice O'Neill, Greg Giraldo, Rich Voss, Keith Robinson, like the guys that were like, you know, the statehood of the Comedy Cellar at the time. And just like, I mean, what better ways to learn than observe these guys, especially like, you know, Norton was always a favorite to me because he's talking about some really crazy outlandish viewpoint, but he's so grounded and likable. And it was like him and Burr, obviously, that were so opinionated. And I think the hardest needle to thread is you can be passionate about an opinion, but how do you make that genuinely funny, right? How do you make that relatable? And Bill almost through his angst and Norton through his confusion. But I don't know. Those were like true inspirations for me. And like, you'd see how poignant Giraldo was and how prolific of a writer he was. And, you know, such a loss that he's no longer with us. I'd love to hear his take on current state of like,
I know he was
politics and everything. Yeah, he was great.
Big favorite at our club, Greg Giraldo. You'll see pictures of him when you walk in.
Yeah, I absolutely loved the guy and adored him. And he was the first one to pay me a compliment my first night at the Cellar. I'll never forget it, you know, because I'd seen his Comedy Central special recently. And I'll never forget it because Robert Kelly and I used to be so energetic. We would go up and do our sets and we'd be drenched in sweat because it's also the Comedy Cellar, right? It's kind of hot at night in New York City. And we'd go sit in the meat cooler after our sets. And Giraldo opened it because he saw us both go in there, and he's like, "Oh, is this where the killers go? Because you guys sell your jokes instead of just telling good ones."
Oh.
And so it was like he did it with a wink and a smile. I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the greats. Hey, I want to thank you so much for doing this, Steve. I told you just before the interview, we had talked once. This is what a hustler Steve is, even back in Sullivan and Son tour. I picked you up from the hotel to go do a radio thing. And we really didn't connect, and it's not a personal thing because you did another interview on the way to the radio gig in my car.
That sounds right.
You were hustling, so man.
I think that's another thing. Like, first off, I am not a morning person.
Yeah.
I am one of the worst people to be around in the morning because until I eat, I'm just really introverted. So I apologize about that.
No, it's all good, man.
But also, like, when you're flying and it's like, you know, whatever, it's just like, I probably got no sleep too. So it's like the worst combination of the two. So I apologize about that.
No, it's all good, man. Because we had, if you remember, it was the season finale of the show. The night at the Comedy Castle. And we had it on the TV and everyone was tweeting about it and the fans were talking back to you guys.
Oh my God, I remember that. Yeah.
It was a fun night. That,
especially at that time, that tour, when you're, so we were doing a tour around while we were filming the show and while the show was still airing and everything. Yeah. And that was probably towards the end of the tour. If it was the season finale, I was absolutely fucking burnt to a crisp because what happened is I'm touring with Owen Benjamin, Ahmed Ahmed, and Roy Wood Jr. Mm-hmm. And I could have just been a comic, but I was Mother Hen. So not only am I constantly doing all the radio, all the promotion, I'm in charge of three other comics and it was a fucking nightmare. So, I do remember that now.
Yeah, we had fun over there.
Run into the ground, but blew it out that night for sure.
Yeah,
so
you guys,
I apologize.
You guys did a great job that night. And like I said, I've seen you a couple of times now opening for Joe and for Sal. And really looking forward to seeing the show. My fiance is coming out this weekend to see us.
Oh, beautiful. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, man. Hey, thanks again for talking to me, Steve Byrne. Get your tickets. Come on, guys. Get out there and see Steve this weekend. You know what to do. Five shows.
Promo code Joel.
Yeah, no promo code, Actually, I'll be working the doors, so I have my own cash discount to get in. You and I will split it, all right? Just me and you.
You got it, pal.
Mark doesn't listen to this, I don't think. If this is the last Comedy Castle podcast, you know what happened, guys.
This is it.
That's it.
Went out with a bang.
All right, Steve, thanks so much, buddy. We'll see you this weekend.
Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you. Bye-bye. Nice talk with Steve. Real nice. Good dude, smart guy, could talk to Steve all day. He apologized for 2013, which he didn't have to apologize for 2013. We're in my car. We're going to a radio station. I said, good, I'll talk to Steve Byrne. That'll be cool. No, talking to some other radio station. Guy was hustling. He was selling that Sullivan and Son. I was reading on Wikipedia. They had 2 million viewers on TBS for that show, which now... Nothing does 2 million viewers. You got to be like an NBA game or an NFL game to get 2 million viewers on cable now. So guy was ahead of the curve. But it's great to have him back at the Comedy Castle this weekend. And just so much, you know, it's really a chance to see a guy who, is he blowing up? Is he on the way up? He just got back from the mothership in Austin where he did 6 shows, I believe. And just so much great stuff. I really encourage you. He may be your new favorite comedian, Steve Byrne. If you're not familiar with what he's doing, this is the weekend to get yourself a ticket. Go watch. I think one of the modern masters, a guy who knows everybody in comedy. You could call him a comics comic. Why don't we just call him the next big star and a great headliner? And you'll see him this weekend. All right, guys, 248-542-9900 to sign up for my advanced comedy class. I think I gave you the wrong day last time on the show. I apologize for that. It's Saturday, July 13th is the next advanced comedy class. I got a nice group with me now that we're working with. But yes, Saturday, July 13th, the next advanced comedy class. Again, that same phone number. Sign up for a beginner class. If you've never done comedy, you'll work with the great Bill Bouchard. And again, Steve Byrne this weekend, ComedyCastle.com has the tickets. Make sure you're buying your tickets on ComedyCastle.com. We hear the horror stories. These people come in. They've spent way too much money for these tickets. And some people, they're not legit in a lot of cases. So please make sure you go to ComedyCastle.com. Our partner is eTix. You will link from us to them and get your legit tickets. That's what you got to do. A lot of scammers out there. A lot of people gaming the system, as they say. Maybe it's not illegal, but it's not fair, and it's ripping you off, all right? All right? Steve Byrne, check him out this weekend. You're going to love it. Let's get out of here. Thanks again for listening. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend and kick your summer off right this weekend with Steve Byrne. We'll catch you next time, everybody, on the Comedy Castle podcast. Bye-bye.